So now we'll have 3 minutes of questions again from the student panel.
Hello, Mr. Kirkpatrick. In my view, the commodification of schools is the largest single factor contributing to the decline in quality of education today. Look at the cost-saving devices introduced by corporate interests to maximize profits. Larger classes, less teachers, cheaper teachers, more standardization, and less personal attention. When education is commodified and students are looked upon as consumers, teachers are forced into an uncomfortable position of having to water down courses, become entertainers even, and do things that might add to the school profits and retain the students, but end up compromising the quality of their education. With this being the case, why is the answer to education reform the embrace of free market ideology rather than stronger attempts to insulate school systems from the excesses of the free market?
Well, in the first place, there's a lot of rhetoric there, with all due respect, without any facts. There are very few corporate schools. There are some. Beacon Management that was involved in the school here has pointed out. But that's the exception. For example, the charter school movement, and I just was in Denver 4 days last week at the second National Charter School Conference, sponsored by the U.S. Department of Education, and even Clinton's Ford has appropriated over $100 million this year. The first charter school in the country was in St. Paul, Minnesota, started by two public teachers who were members of the Federation of Teachers. It still exists. It's successful. Of the first 400 schools, one quarter of them were started by public school teachers, and they're still running. So to the extent the corporations get into this, that's an exception. But even if they do, one of the problems on both sides, we do a lot of demonizing. It doesn't matter whether John Walton favors this or not, or whether I favor or not. The question is it a good idea? And we should get away from the thing, well, it's a terrible idea because corporation favors it, because a corporate favors something that's opposed is terrible. I have an advisory committee that I work with, made up of teachers from all across the country, literally from Maine to California. John Gatto, who's from here, Teacher of the Year 3 times in New York City, 2 times in New York State. Tracy Bailey, National Teacher of the Year in Florida in 1993, a Federation member. I work almost largely with public school people, and Howard Fuller is one of my advisors as well. I have nothing to do with corporations. I have nothing to do with non-public schools. I'm not even Catholic. This is a good idea, and increasingly teachers are for it, and they're getting involved in the movement.
Okay. We just have about 1 minute left, so I'm going to make this short.
Okay. Okay. In several essays on your school report website and tonight, you have remarked that as a result of class stratification of communities and the disparate results in the funding of public education, the elite suburban schools are better than inner city or urban schools.
No, I didn't say they're better. I just said they close their doors in many cases.
Okay. But given these inequalities have resulted from certain market forces in society at large, why are you so confident that the so-called invisible hand of the market will create greater equality under a voucher system?
Because it's only the public system that draws artificial lines within which you must live. Not only a district, but they even tell you what school attendance area you live in. Non-public schools and charter schools, which are public schools by law, the law in Pennsylvania calls them public schools, they have no boundaries. They will accept students and do accept students from anywhere. The public schools do not, and in many cases, will not.
Thank you. Now let's welcome the second speaker from the opposition side, Melissa Butler.
Hello. The other side sounds moderate. The other side sounds reasonable. Let's look farther. Let's probe deeper. And let's see what larger public issues are at stake. Who is behind the voucher movement? This movement is part of an overall corporate educational reform movement which seeks to privatize educational services. Now, no matter what you may want, what choice you may want, this is what's behind the voucher choice policies. Who are the players? The Bradley Foundation, the Heritage Foundation, the Commonwealth Foundation, the Heartland Institute, all push narrow, organized agendas and fund research to solidify their agendas. Bradley Foundation gives $55 million to conservative think tanks. Specifically, they give $2.7 million to the Heritage Foundation. Both of these foundations are key players in the voucher movement. Both are responsible for free-range voucher policies in Milwaukee and other similar attempts nationwide. How do the players operate? Well, it's not a conspiracy of little evil men in cloaks hiding behind a curtain. It's much more systematic, it's much more procedural, and it's not hidden. The money, paper, and number trail is easy to follow. All you have to do is do a little digging. And the way their hegemonic power operates is through fairly good PR campaigns, giving a facade of helping people. An example is in Mesmer High School in Milwaukee that often is used as a backdrop for photo shoots for the Heritage Foundation and the Bradley Foundation to show that this Catholic all-black school is part of the voucher movement to help children of color. Now, their agenda is clear, and it's twofold, and they say it specifically. Number one, they want to push vouchers grassroots state by state. Number two, they want to solidify and fund research as proof to convince the public that vouchers are good. The goal? Dismantle public education. Why? Their slick rhetoric tells us that this is necessary to help children struggling in trapped, failing public schools. But this masks the danger that hides behind their particular notion of choice. The right's notion of choice rests its faith in the free market. We give you a voucher, now you're free to choose, now you have access to any quality you want. But this ignores a few things. It ignores, number one, that vouchers don't cover all costs. So many children, in fact, the children that need the most, will be left behind. And number two, it ignores the fact that schools do the choosing, especially under Pennsylvania law. If schools don't think you're the quality, your behavior problems are the quality that we want, no choice, you can't come. The right's notion of choice sees the dismantling of public education as the main ingredient in their overall plan to dismantle social entitlement and government responsibility for societal needs. This coalition of people see people like Milton Friedman and Charles Murray as guiding visionaries. The Bradley Foundation funded $1 million for the research of the bell curve, which argues that there is innate racial IQ differences, and these are the reason for social stratification in our society. The consequence of this is that the idea of social programs are a waste. Why should we fund people at the bottom of the scale if they don't have the intellectual capacity to improve? Thus, we allow it up to choice. We give a little money in the middle. It allows a kind of survival of the fittest to take place. And this is why the bell curve argues in Chapter 18, and it offers voucher choice as the educational reform strategy. Now I have to ask, educational reform for whom? They say that the cognitive elite need choice for Rolls-Royce schools, and that this innovation will trickle down to the basic product of McDonald's schools. They use those terms. Our community's children are not basic products. This trickle-down economics, this trickle-down innovation, it won't work for education. The market doesn't work that way. It doesn't help people struggling at the bottom. The market can't spur innovation in schools left with half of their resources when they're currently struggling with status quo funding. A market-based school system will encourage the advertising of the school to be more important than what happens within the school. Schools will be more concerned with marketing themselves than with teaching. It'll be what school is the cleanest, what school is the glitziest, what school has the most gimmicks. And when voucher schools are established, as have been established in Milwaukee, the bottom line is profit, not education. Now, the invisible hand is poised to slap quality education in the face. What we need is a deeper commitment to the public. Now, I'm certainly not here to defend the status quo of public education. I work every day to change public schools, and I will until the day I die. And many of you out there and many people around the country are struggling to create democratic, responsible reform within our public schools. Now, this issue over whether public or private systems provide better educational services is important, but it masks a larger point. The more specific issue is about how choices are made within these public and private systems. Public spaces are essential, and the types of dialogue, debate, and decision-making that happen in public are what allow us to fight for fairness and equity, and in fact even allow us to have those terms. Privatization erodes these spaces. It changes schools from being accountable to citizens to having schools being accountable to investors, advertisers, and the bottom line of profit-making. Now, the issue still remains. There are substantial problems with our public education system. But these problems, including segregation, poor facilities, lack of quality teachers and curriculum, these problems are not because the schools are public. These problems exist because people with power don't choose to care about the public. Our current problems with public schools are linked to larger economic and political problems, poverty, and the colonization of African American and Latino communities. Since people don't usually like to name poverty and colonization as problems, they systematize a diversion. Vouchers. Lack of public choice or lack of individual choice. As if a coupon worth part of tuition will suddenly erase all material limitations to choices that exist now? Vouchers don't even make a dent in the material limitations to choice.
And it's not surprising that public schools are being blamed at the same time that urban public schools are being increasingly populated by more and more African and Latino children. Now, we don't hear that public schools are monopolies with inefficiency in Fox Chapel, Quaker Valley, Cranberry Township. They only become a problem when white middle class children try to go to school in inner cities that are populated by non-white children. Then the problem suddenly becomes public education. Now, if people won't talk about race and economic injustice in our current government educational system, what makes you think that these same people will suddenly care about justice under a free market system? No way. In reality, there are people struggling every day, and their choices are limited, including their choices to public schools. What are some livable, responsible choices we can make as a community? Choices that care for people, not products. Choices that prioritize people and equity over economic privilege. We should be discussing the way that schools are funded in this country and how we could change from a property tax system to a more equitable income tax system. And in fact, Vermont is the only state in the United States that has actually made that equitable change, and I will discuss Vermont as an example more later. We should be talking about curriculum reform and how to involve parents and children in decisions about what is taught. We should be talking about the role public schools can play in community struggles, serving community needs, providing resources, family care, access to information. These educational reform discussions are necessary, and they are not too radical, but they have been pushed to the margins over the past 15 years. And that's why when we are faced with severe poverty and colonization, which impacts all of our public spaces, including schools, the political forces that created these problems are disguised with diversions that make inequities worse. Now, in order to make the vouchers plan politically acceptable, the advocates must get support from poor communities, black communities, and working class communities. And they are buying that support with an illusion of choice. By pretending to offer genuine choice to those who have been systematically denied choice by the market, voucher proponents prey like vultures on the carnage of neglect. Why should we trust people who argue that there are genetic IQ differences between races? Why should we trust people who want all government responsibility for social equity to be left to the market? Why should we trust people who never struggled for more equitable funding in schools? Why should we trust people who are reviving an educational policy that was first used to avoid desegregation after the 1954 Board versus Brown of Education decision? As a community, we cannot allow this to happen.